Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce my guest, Robin Kelson, who is coming to us from Whitefish, Montana, which is about 50 miles south of where I live, although it's a higher elevation, so their weather's sometimes a little bit colder than ours. And she has a business called The Good Seed Company, and she's here to tell us about her business and her gardening experiences. So welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Jackie.
Oh, well, I'm so happy to have you and glad you could join us this afternoon. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Okay. So we, The Good Seed Company, sells organic and ecologically farmed seed that's all locally adapted, biodiverse, non-GMO, open pollinated, and heirloom. And our goal is to support communities in reestablishing their own practice of selecting, saving, and sharing seeds in order to support communities in rebuilding their own local supply of biodiverse seeds for common use. And how we came into being is the seed company actually started in 1980 by a group of folks up in the Okanagan Highlands in northeastern Washington state, up near the Canadian border. These individuals had families, and they lived on 600 acres of pristine land, in literally in the middle of, one might say, nowhere. And they just grew seeds for their family. They grew food for their family. They wanted to go to be growing their own food, as many people are starting to seriously get interested in, and had to do a lot of research in identifying plants that did well in their high latitude and altitude there. They're in probably a zone 3, zone 4 cusp. And as they were growing the foods and identified varieties that did well, they saved those seeds, and then they started to sell those seeds, and that's how the Good Seed Company came into being. And, just about 40 years later, Harris Dunkelberger, believe it or not, that's his name, is in his mid-70s, and he's not wanting to continue this business anymore because, you know, he's just moving on to the next chapter in his life. And I came to know him, and he was just going to let it go. And I said, no, you can't do that. These are extraordinary seeds. You've been saving them and selecting them, and they have incredible genetics. And so we agreed to take it on, move it to Montana, and use it as a base for developing a cadre, if you will, a community of seed growers and seed savers here. So we're using it as a foundation for building a seed library, as an education resource for teaching people how to save seed, and developing a network to support people in sharing seed, because those are the three key components for rebuilding our seed supply: select, save, and share. So that's what
Excellent.
We do.
Robin, that is just fantastic. What an exciting story and a wonderful service. Something we so need. A lot of people don't realize what's going on with seeds and how they're, the options to get seeds that will reproduce is limited, and the importance of having a seed library. And you might, take a minute and kind of explain what a seed library is a little bit more for people.
Sure, happy to. So a seed library is it's a depository. It's literally just like a library. It's a place where seeds are kept, and members come and take out seeds, just like you take out a book, and you grow them in your garden that summer. And your only commitment is you agree to bring back at least as many seeds as you took out back to the depository. You can certainly bring back more. But what it does is it allows you to learn how to grow those plants. You get to eat some of the food that that plant produces, as long as you save enough seed to bring back from, one or more of those plants.
So wait, do the people have to buy the seeds, or they borrow the seeds?
They borrow the seeds. A member comes and takes out the seeds, grows them. And I'm saying you're welcome to eat the food that the plant makes, plants make, but you also agree to save some of those plants for seed and to bring back at least as many seeds as you took out. So if you took out 5 seeds, you promise to bring back 5 seeds from your new plant.
An amazing option to help people who can't. I've never even heard of such a thing.
And yeah, the really important thing about it is that by doing that, by growing the plant, because plants need to be grown and every year, you know, I mean, we save our seeds, and yes, seeds have a good seed storage life, but if you don't plant them, you lose the genetic vibrancy in the seed. So if I grow plants in my garden and then I select some seeds from some of those plants, put them back into the library, and then you take some of those seeds and you plant them in your garden, and then you bring some back, you've taken some of my seeds and they've grown again and they've enhanced their genetics, and then you save those and bring them back. We're helping to build and save the seeds of healthy plants. It's very important to keep growing the seeds and keep saving the seeds and sharing them so that they have the experience of developing the genetics of how to live in different soils and under different conditions. That's very important for maintaining the vibrancy of the seed vitality. I hope that's clear.
I had no idea. That's amazing. And I mean, so can they grow in other climates, or is it just specifically like the Northwest?
No, they'll grow in
They
lots of
probably
climates. You know, we
they
just.
will. Okay. So do you ship them to people?
Oh,
Or
yeah,
it's only for you do?
we
That's
do.
what I
The Good
thought.
Seed Company also has seed sales. So we have an online store called the Good Seed Company. And we sell to anybody who wants to come buy our seeds. So we support ourselves through our
Okay,
seed
cool.
sales. And we also, but our main vision and mission is to support a community in developing their own local seed supply through a seed library and education. So we get people from all over the country buying our seeds, and you know, we also have seeds for sale in seed racks in three stores in the north part of the valley, at Third Street Market, Mountain Valley Foods, and Sundrop.
Excellent.
Yeah, so you know, you can buy our seeds, you can join the library, you can just come and attend a workshop which we'll be having soon. You know, it's just intended for that purpose.
How long have you had it?
I've had it for 3 years. This
Oh, you
is our
have.
second year in stores and online.
Because I was thinking, well, for one thing, I'm seeing more seeds in stores everywhere than I have in other springs. But also, I would think people would love to have local stores or local seeds, a local seed company, because, you know, most everything you see are like the burpees and that, what is it, the Irish Spring people or
Right, Irish
whatever.
eyes. Irish eyes.
Just different, you know, where it would be nicer to have one that's right here in Montana. At least, you know, for us, I think. And I love this whole library. And so we were introduced through a mutual friend of ours, Carolyn, and I just saw her last night when I went to work, and she was saying that she had come to the library just yesterday and got to pick out her seeds, and what a great experience it was to get to go into the vault and look around and choose. So she was very excited about that. And I guess I didn't really understand what she was talking about, but now I do. So I just think that's the most fantastic idea. And then also, like my listeners probably know, I talk about libraries a lot because I love the library. Like, even though I'm up here in Eureka, I don't know if you've been up here yet, but our library is pretty tiny. Like, you could probably read every title on the shelves of the adult section in 2 hours easily, peruse every book. But it has an amazing interlibrary loan program. And then it has a very good children's section. As a teacher, I've always gone to that library and supplemented my classroom with books from there. My kids have always loved those library books, all my students. So, you know, I just think libraries are invaluable and would love to see them expand. And what a great, and then who else did I just talk to? Another person who was a master gardener. She was just on like 2 episodes ago, I think, and was talking about when you get your master gardener degree, you have to go, you do like some public service in your community in 40 hours. And she was going to work at the garden at her library. And I thought, oh, your library's building a garden? What a great idea.
That's great.
And just, and what a, that's an awesome, just as a side note, did you see Kalispell's library won number one, got the number one library award in Montana last night?
Oh,
It was
that's fabulous
in the
to
paper today because
hear.
they're expanding with their new information, what's it called, information something program. So but a seed library is so exciting, and just it's so essential for us to share seeds that grow, because a lot of the seeds that you buy don't, you know, they're only good for one season, right? Isn't that the problem nowadays? A lot of seeds won't reproduce.
Well,
Or you grow the vegetables and those seeds don't reproduce?
you need to grow open pollinated seeds. Heirlooms are a type of open pollinated seed, but you need to grow a seed plants from seeds that will grow true to type. A lot of the bigger seed companies sell what are called hybrid seeds, and there's nothing wrong with hybrid seeds. It's just the genetics of plants are such that when you first cross two plant species together, you know, say two varieties of corn or something, the progeny is called the hybrid, and it's also called an F1. And that progeny, the seeds of that progeny, generally speaking, will not grow true to type. It's just the nature of plant genetics. You have to do a lot of growing out to get it to a point where the genetics stabilize, and at that point it's considered what's called open pollinated, and then the seeds will grow true to type. So a lot of fancy varieties come out every year from the bigger seeds companies because they try to make, you know, just new varieties to entice people to buy seeds, and that's fine. However, those seeds will not grow true to type. The bigger difficulty, of course, is that our seed supply is being infiltrated, if you will, by GMO carrying varieties. So far, it's not vastly, you know, it hasn't infiltrated too badly into the vegetable world, but it's starting to. And one, those seeds will not grow true to type, generally speaking. And two, they have been modified in a laboratory to contain DNA from non-plant life forms in order to achieve some particular characteristic, like be more pest resistant or maybe frost resistant. But there are issues. If you start to introduce that genetics into the world population of plants, then you will start to get this non-plant life form entering into the plants and entering into the food supply of all the, you know, the microbes in the soil, the pollinators, the people who eat those plants. And it's not at all well understood the impact of that additional non-plant life form. And it's actually starting to look like it has a disruptive negative effect on lots of things that nobody thought about, like our pollinator bees, our pollinator insects, or the microbes in the soil that are necessary to make good soil, you know, and even the immune systems of humans. So it's important for people to be taking control, if you will, of their own food supply, their own seed supply, and develop the resources of knowing how to grow our own food.
Absolutely. So that's part of why I started this podcast, to help people learn how to grow their own food. And like our goal, I mean, ultimately is to teach people how to grow like a year's worth of food. Like I was even thinking about coming up with a challenge where everybody picks like one vegetable this year and says, you know, I'm going to try to grow 1 year's worth of this one specific vegetable. You know, like last year, Mike picked potatoes and we got close. We just ran out of potatoes. Like January, February, somewhere right in there. And he's grown enough green beans, pretty much. He cans all our green beans and all. We still have carrots, so we're getting closer. I mean, we're not anywhere near there. We planted an orchard a few years ago, so we have apples, and we're hoping to have, you know, enough apples to get us through the winter if we ever get a root cellar built. Is another thing that we need. You know, storage is always a tough issue, but just, you know, you might not be able to grow all of your food, but certainly you can grow enough to supplement. And so that's just our goal, to help people get to that point.
Wonderful. That's a great idea. It's a great idea.
Oh, well, thanks. So let's
sorry.
just
What
talk
was
about
that?
your gardening experience. So tell us, I always like to kind of start the show with an introduction to our guest by like talking about, you know, well, how old were you when you started your first garden? Were you a little kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? You know, just share a little bit about that with us.
I'd say my first, so I would say my first real significant gardening experience was as just out of high school. So I graduated in the late 70s, and I was looking for an opportunity to learn how to grow my own food. You learn to be self-sufficient. And through some friends, I found my way to a farm called the Pippindale Farm in Santa Rosa, California, run by, it was really just a little homestead run by a gentleman by the name of David Cavagnaro. I didn't know anything about anything, so that's kind of the best way to go. And David turns out to have been this extraordinary connection. Anyways, he had an acre and a half garden that you tended by hand. He had 150 different fruit trees that he had grafted himself from trees he'd remembered having great fruit in the Tamaulipas Valley where he grew up. So he went and found all those trees and grafted them onto rootstock. And so we had this just incredible array of a variety of fruit. And this is, of course, Northern California, so you can really pretty much grow year-round. And we grew seed from all over the world and saved seed and sent it to Seed Savers Exchange, which was a fairly new endeavor at that time. This was, again, in the late 70s. And David ultimately went on to become the so the Seed Savers Exchange is a very well-known organization, nonprofit organization that has developed heritage gardens for saving and exchanging heirloom seeds. So, kind of what we're doing here, but on a much, 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 much bigger scale. And they have an extraordinarily robust community of growers all over the country who grow seeds in their gardens and then send them in every year. And it's a lovely, lovely community of people. Tremendous educational resource. And David ended up running their heritage gardens for, I think, about 8 years and is on their board of directors. And now he has his own organization in Decorah, Iowa, called the Pepper something. I can't remember what it's called right now. It'll come back. But at any rate, I found my way to his little Pippindale garden and had an extraordinary opportunity to just learn from an amazing mentor, all things related to what is effectively organic growing. You know, I call it, we here at the seed company, the Good Seed Company, we call it ecological farming because it's, I think it's a broader term. And it's just simply means growing food without synthetic chemical inputs by people who are dedicated to building good soil in harmony with nature, with the intention of producing delicious nutrient food. You know, that's how our ancestors grew food 10,000 years ago. And certainly that's how our amazing gardeners and farmers who are certified organic grow. But there is a whole world of people growing that way who are not defining themselves as certified organic simply because they're not going through the certification process. But all of these people are dedicated to building the soil, because if you need good soil in order to have nutrient-dense food, and if you don't pay attention to the extraordinary life force energy and wealth of life that lives in the soil, you're never going to have good quality plants or good quality food that comes out of those plants, or good quality seed for that matter. So, people who understand that and grow in harmony with nature are maintaining the heritage that we've learned from our ancestors and passing it on to the next generation.
Absolutely. And so that kind of goes into my next couple of questions right there about, because Mike likes to call it earth-friendly gardening.
Yeah.
What we do
Precisely.
here, and that's kind of just, you know, kind of the same thing, a lot of very similar you know, values and beliefs about building the soil and, you know, working with nature. So was it David Carbonero that inspired you to start using, you know, the organic type of techniques and ecological techniques? That
Yeah.
sounds like
It's
that's where you learned that and were
that's what
inspired
I've
and
never learned anything else. You know, I just started there.
And what a great start. So how long were you there? Like for a
I was
season
there
or a couple?
a couple years, and then
You
I went
were.
from
Oh my
there. I
gosh.
did, and then I decided I wanted to go back. I just fell in love with plants, and I decided I wanted to go to college and study plants. So I left the farm and went to the University of Oregon to pursue a degree in things related to plants, so botany or things to that nature. I ended up getting a degree in biology, but anyway, so I was there for a couple of years.
But sciences for sure. So just let me quickly, did you grow up in California or your friends were like, go here and you moved from somewhere?
So this is why I say my first garden experience was when I was an adult, because I grew I'm a, I'm well, anyways, I grew up in Puerto Rico in the tropics,
Oh, how
and
exciting.
so you know, all you have to do is kind of look at a plant and it grows there. You know, it's a very different world. And my gardening experience really was really more flower related. We had we had some orchids that we grew out back, and so that was my experience really. I
Nice.
didn't understand vegetable gardening until I was a little older, and so just started talking to people and asking questions, and you know, I feel like the angels of the universe guided me to David. I'd never been to California, so I just found my way there.
Wow. Well, how exciting. What an journey that you've had. Well, so how about your garden this year? Tell us about something that grew well this year.
So this past year, I would say our tomatoes grew really, really well this past year. And you know, I was
Oh,
thinking about
nice.
that when you asked me the question earlier. And so I don't know if you remember, but last year we had a cold, for at least I don't know whether you had
Yes.
one, but we had a cold frost in early
Absolutely.
January. You know, it just killed a bunch of stuff. And
September, early September.
early September, well, I don't know what I said. I meant September.
January.
I said January.
That's
Well,
fine.
any frost in January.
Right.
Okay, so early September, and our tomatoes did well, you know. And we have a bunch of tomatoes that whose seeds originated in Russia, and they actually came. A lot of them came from a gentleman by the name of Bill McDorman, who was trying to grow. Was from Idaho, and he was trying to grow gardens in his high altitude mountain home in the 80s, and decided to go see if he could find resources for vegetables that grew well at that altitude. And he had an opportunity to go to Russia before the Soviet Union dissolved, and it was an extraordinary experience. He met all these people, and they kind of fed him all their seeds that they had been saving. And there are all these amazing gardeners in Russia who had grown tomatoes, managed to grow tomatoes, and so the and they'd been saving, selecting, and sharing seeds among themselves. And he came home with over 60 varieties of tomatoes that grow well
Wow.
throughout Russia, Siberia, Moscow, St. Petersburg, all over the country. And we have a bunch of those. And the most amazing thing about it is that you can see these types of these seeds in little seed companies all over the web, you know, there, and whether the company's out of Colorado or California or Idaho or Washington or here in Montana, people are selling, are growing these seeds, saving them, and sharing them by selling them. And so now these seed varieties that he brought back are all over the world. And we had a bunch of them. We have Moscow Bush, Siberian Patio, Debaro, Galena. There's a bunch of them, and they all did really well. The plants look, you know, horrible after that frost. All the leaves were just, you know, kind of mushy and gray at that point. But the plant was quite hardy, and all we had to do was throw sheets over the plants at the, you know, when it at nighttime. And we were harvesting tomatoes into October.
Even
Those
after that frost, like, do you have them in a hoop
Oh,
house or something?
yeah. No, I had some in the ground. I had some in pots on my patio. I just threw sheets over them and, you know, bless them, and they did really well. I was eating fresh tomatoes until October.
Nice. No, we lost almost all of our plants in that first. Mike had plastic over him, but it got down to like, I think it was like down to 22, like the first week of September or something, really just nothing we could do. So, all right. Well, how about something you would do different next year or want to try new for next year? Got anything that you haven't done before you're excited about?
Do different next year. Let's see.
Or this season coming up? I now that we're already into the new spring.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying. I have a whole slew of medicinal plants that I've received from a gentleman by the name of Michael Pilarski. He's a ethnobotanist and medicinal herb grower, wildcrafter, and permaculturist out of Hot Springs, Montana. And he has given me a whole host of American medicinal plants that are good permaculture plants. And so I'm going to be trialing all those out here this spring. I've got them started in our little greenhouse here, and looking forward to that and sharing those with people in the years ahead.
Excellent. All right. Tell me about something that didn't work so well this season.
So what didn't work last year was one of the things that didn't grow was eggplant. Mm-hmm. Here's something that didn't grow well for me last year, but it's easy to fix, and that was melons. And again, we had a cool June, and I think what I would do differently, which is what many people in Montana do, is I would have put plastic down on the soil when I put the plants out and help keep the soil warm. Because I think for me, from my experience, was my soil was just too cool for too long. And I just didn't get them out in time with warm soil long enough. So that was my experience. And I noticed that people who did take care to do things like that, or start them out in a hoop house or things like that, where they could take advantage of heat when it was so cool, their melons were further along than mine were.
Okay.
So I would do differently next year. Because I think that's an easy fix. But something I did try that didn't do well at all were eggplant. I just was not successful with getting them to ripen in time. And I think I'd like to hear other people's experience, but they might do really well just in a hoop house all summer.
I think I have heard some guests say that they need kind of a warmer thing. But I did talk to Mike about it, and he was saying that one thing that worked really well for him was he used to put them in separate beds. You know, he'd put like, you know, two eggplants over here and two eggplants over there and two eggplants over there. And then one year he put them all together in, like, we kind of have this old boat that he's built into a deep bed, and he put them all in there. And he said that really worked, so they could cross pollinate. Because his biggest problem was he would get big plants and he would get beautiful flowers, but we wouldn't get as much fruit, you know, actual eggplants. And so he said once he did that, he started getting way more eggplants. I'm thinking Elizabeth Leonard from the Kitchen Garden. I hate to say this because what if I'm wrong? But I think she's episode 19, and she said something about if you're getting lots of leaves and big plants like that, it's from too much nitrogen from chicken manure. And we do use a lot of chicken manure for our garden. So I'm not sure, you know, how that goes.
That's a common communication, yes.
Oh, okay. So just something to think about. But and also I think different varieties of eggplants do better up here than others. So that could be it too.
Yeah.
But eggplants are tough. I've had a lot of guests say that eggplants are one of their tougher ones. So
find something that works, you know, that's great.
In our climate. But it's hard because I love eggplants. I like to put them in stir fries or eat them just fried, or eggplant parmesan, or put them on pizza, or I can do anything with an eggplant. So,
good.
And when they're tiny and they're fresh, you know, if you don't let them get super big, they're just so perfect. Or an omelet. I can do anything with it. I'm a big veggie eater though. So, how about something you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time?
You know, I would, I think root vegetables and bulb plants are super easy in this climate. You know, carrots, garlic, onion, potatoes, beets, parsnips, turnips, you know, they just, rutabagas, I think they just do fabulously in this climate. Another one are the kales and the hearty greens, so kales and mustards and sorrel and chards, those are great, and they're great plants to plant in the fall because you can, or in the late summer for a fall garden because they can handle the frost. And now you're eating greens into the winter. And if you just put some a good body of mulch over them, you can get them to, they'll be your first plants up in the spring. So it's nothing, there's nothing like having fresh greens in the early spring when it's still looking like, fruit is a month or so away.
And
So,
that spinach is hardy.
and
Spinach
spinach.
will come up through the snow and everything,
Yes, exactly. So
which is nice.
those are easy and fun to grow.
Something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow up here.
Well, I would say the eggplant and soybeans. I think I have had difficulty with.
I've never tried to grow soybeans. I
Yeah.
suppose that could be tough. How about which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there anything that you have to force yourself or discipline yourself to get out there and do?
I would say weeding is one of them. If I don't stay on top and it gets a little overwhelming, then it's like, oi.
So
And
do you have any tips for staying on top of it? Any like little
just
secrets that you use to make you get out there or
I go out early in the morning or in the cool of the evening and just, try to set it up with an opportunity to just visit the plants and not view it as, weeding. It's just an opportunity to visit the garden.
Mike was just talking about that the other day, that when you water with like one of those water wands, not only does it go directly to the root and kind of oxygenate the root that way, but also it's a good opportunity to be right there and really close. And if you see a weed, you just grab it. And he
Yeah.
just really liked that you're just communing right with the plants right then and there, and while
Yeah.
you're visiting with them. So
Yeah.
and he does not he makes it to me, it makes it seem like we never have any weeds, because I think he's just always he must do like 50 back or bendovers a day, or hundreds, just an hour, 50 an hour, probably hundreds a day. Just he's constantly bending over and grabbing something here and grabbing something there. But I've always thought, because we have very limited water, we just dug a deep well. Last year was the first year we've had water really to irrigate or anything, so we've always been very just thrifty with our water beyond belief. And so hauling it through August and stuff, and so very limited supply. So our water has always been very concentrated on the individual plants, which definitely reduces the weeds that you get.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have a sprinkler. We never this year we might. Last year we kind of did. But
And if you're growing plants in a permaculture arrangement, it's also a different definition of weeds, but yeah. So just anyway, so that's if you hold it as weeding, then it's not such a fun activity.
So, how about your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Oh, gosh, there's lots, but I would say soil preparation. That's tough. It really is tough. Soil preparation, bathing the plants, as the seeds as they come through the soil. Just that experience of checking on new seed germination is just always, it's like Christmas every day. And
And they grow
but
so fast. Like, I
it did.
cannot keep up with what Mike has growing in our little, he like plastics in our porch to make like a temporary greenhouse. And
Yeah.
just, he's transplanted. Well, first he mists all the baby little seedlings. And every morning it's like, oh, look at the sprouted and look at the sprouted. And then you're looking at like the little black-eyed Susans that have been there for like a month now, I think, and still haven't broke ground. But,
Yeah.
I know they take forever. And, but then the other ones that he's put in the containers, and just like overnight, it's just so fast how it just amazes me how fast they grow.
Yeah,
So yeah, it's fun.
I have all these medicinals that Michael Pilarski gave me, and I don't know them at all. And so it's and some of them are,
Do you want to share with our listeners maybe like what a medicinal is and what maybe
Oh, it's
some
true.
examples would be, in case they don't
So,
know?
I mean, a medicinal is any plant that an herbalist would use to help balance the body. Really, I mean, it can be your chamomile that you make into a tea, or the mint that you drink to make a mint tea. Both of those are calming to the body and are balancing to the nervous system. A lot of plants have abilities to support balancing and calming our digestive system, because it's a very complicated system that manages how we process our food. And anything that can support liver function or kidney function, anything like that, supports that process. And our ancestors before us for, again, 10,000 years have been studying plants and learning about that information and using plants for that purpose to support our bodies. And there's just, there are probably tens of thousands of plants that have medicinal properties. And a lot of them we might think of as a weed, or we don't, they're not necessarily what we would think of as an agriculturally so important crop, but they have tremendous value. And they're very simple, and a lot of the culinary herbs actually that we use in our food to flavor our food have medicinal properties. And that's actually how they were originally used centuries ago. They just have this cool flavor that's fun to cook with, but you're actually getting a medicinal benefit when you're using caraway or anise or oregano or marjoram or chives, or they all of them have medicinal properties. These ones that I've received from Michael are, a lot of them are naturalized in America. Some of them are native to America, but a lot of them were brought when people from other countries came to America and are now naturalized here and have been used by the local populations for hundreds of years. Let's see, there's an arnica that's actually native to the Northwest. And arnica, of course, is a, you can make a tincture out of it, and it's a lovely topical for reducing muscle injuries. And that's a plant that we grow, and you can buy our seeds and grow them yourself and make your own tinctures or your own ointments out of. There's horehound and skullcap and stone seed, all, curious sounding named plants that have these wonderful medicinal properties.
And
There's
arnica grows wild
it
here.
grows wild here. You
It's
could you could
so pretty.
yes.
And I just got to tell this quick little story. So Mike and I met planting trees for the Forest Service up here. And the tree planters would always like laugh because I was like the slowest tree planter. It just amazed me they even kept me on, but I guess I planted good trees, so I was good there. But I was always being the rock, and they always could tell where the rock was because that's where the arnica grew. So they would always laugh at me because I was the slowest person, got stuck in the, not the nicest soil to grow in or to put a tree into the ground. But that was many years ago, and but I still remember that. And but they would always laugh because the planting in the rocky soil would make you really sore. And then a lot of the wives of the tree planters or different people would have those salves, and or make them out of a tincture, and people would rub the arnica on when they were sore at the end of the day.
Isn't that
The
great?
arnica oils, yes. So, but pretty
So
little yellow flowers
that's
for
great.
sure.
So just we're planting those seeds, and it's just been like watching new babies come, when they germinate, because I don't really know how long they're going to take to germinate. And so I'm very excited to see that they're all germinating and we're growing them. And so that's a favorite activity right now.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, how about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what would it be? Like, what could you not live without?
There's a Japanese hand hoe that I like a lot. I think they're called a gamma hoe or something like that. That would be my favorite tool.
Okay. Yep, I had somebody else recommend that too, I think. How about eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? Because that's something I struggle with a lot. Is I tell people a lot, I harvest it one day and wash it the next day, and then finally eat it the third day. Like rarely do I get it all done in one day. Sometimes, but so do you have any suggestions for that? Keeping it from going bad.
Don't harvest it all at once if you can. I mean, I don't. I mean, I have yeah, so I have a raspberry bush, and I guess the a freezer's your best could be is a gardener can be a gardener's best friend. 'Cause all you got to do is wash the fruit and put it in a plastic bag, label it and put it in a good freezer, and you've now processed it. So it's easier than, the coordination of effort for canning. So if you're pressed for time, throw it in the freezer.
That's a good one. I like that. And I'm lucky we still have some huckleberries from last year that are in my freezer that I love to just take out some handfuls of huckleberries. They always freeze good too. We never have enough raspberry. We don't have a big enough patch to freeze our raspberries. Those
Oh.
are one thing I don't have a problem with. Those I seem to like navigate down there. Mike, they're like the first ones to go in the morning. Handfuls of raspberries, just, but that's because probably they can get eaten off the vine. And like
Yes.
I said, we don't have a lot. We get a few handfuls
That's
every
true.
day is all.
Yeah.
How about secrets for preserving food or making it last? Do you can anything? Or I guess you said freezing. We could count that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have canned. I don't know that I have any special secret to offer, but I enjoy canning, and it's a fun thing to do.
You do? Okay.
Hey, can I
Were you gonna say
interrupt for a second?
yes? Yeah.
Because up earlier on your list, one of your questions was, "What's the best gardening advice you ever received?"
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I wanted to share this, and it comes from a man named David King, who started the Seed Library of Los Angeles. And he said the best. So he said the following, which I think is the best advice that I ever heard, which was, "Get a chair. The first thing you plant in a garden is a chair, and you should. That's where you should sit." And I think that's the best advice anyone's ever given me.
I like that.
There you go.
Now, why tell the listeners a little bit more, because maybe I might be thinking something different than you are.
Well, I say that because there's so much to get out of a garden. Besides the food, and one of those things is just sitting and being and enjoying the pace of life that is the pace of the garden. It's moving all the time. It's just at a pace much sh slower than the average human being speed today. So, and it's also a great way to learn from your garden, to just by sitting in your garden and maybe looking at your plants, maybe taking a nap, but just literally sitting and enjoying the life that force that's the life force energy in your garden.
Absolutely. So my very first reaction, which is funny because I'm always talking about I'm the painter and I sit down in the garden way more than I work down there. And I have like my little tree. I sit under the pear tree and read. But my very first reaction when you said that was you want to know where the sun's going to be and what spots are going to get the most sun for where it's going to be hotter and which is going to be shadier and where to plan your garden. And Mike and I spend a lot of time at the end of the day. Or even in the morning with our coffee, we'll walk around and he'll tell me, his plans. And I go around with our little journal usually. And I mean, I gotta say anymore, the digital age, I'm a little lazier, so I just take pictures that are digitally stamped. But I have many journals full where I would go around and say, this is what we're gonna plant here. This is when we put the seeds in. This is when we harvested the first thing. And I just always think that's a really nice thing to do in the garden. And just like you said, sitting there and looking around and absorbing it. Mike doesn't sit still very long, but I do.
That's great. Well, good.
Well, that's a great one. Good. You know what? I added that, but I haven't added it to my blank, and so you're the first one who's answered that. What a
Oh,
great, thank
sure.
you. I'm glad. If
Welcome.
I have any others that I've added that I forgot to add to my blank, let me know.
Okay.
Don't hesitate to interrupt. Okay. How about any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods?
Stir fry everything, so nothing in. But here's one thing that I have this idea, which that comes to mind, is sweet potatoes are a great ingredient for making hummus. So, we typically make hummus out of chickpeas or garbanzo beans. You can make a great hummus out of sweet potatoes or yams.
Well, there we go.
So it's a lovely food. Or
I might try that right away. I was just looking for hummus in the store last night. That sounds so good, and I love hummus.
good.
Perfect. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Oh,
Or is
I
that
think I would
it?
say my favorite recipe
Okay.
is making a salad from the garden. You know, I have a lot of edible flowers in the garden, so
Ooh,
nasturtium.
tell us about some edible flowers. Pardon me,
Oh,
sorry.
Lord. Let's see. So scarlet runner bean, it has an edible flower, bachelor buttons, nasturtiums, your chives,
You can
bulbs.
eat bachelor buttons?
Oh yeah, they make this, and you break them open, and the petal, you know, the little flower
I had
all
no idea it
dissolves
was
into all
out.
those little petals, and it's very pretty in a salad. Or you can put them in ice cube trays and make little ice cubes out of them, so you have this nice little
Ooh,
flower
I
inside
do
your
that with violets.
violets or pansies. Those are other ones. So I love to make a salad, you know, a colorful salad out of all the greens and flowers in my garden.
Oh, perfect answer. I love that. I always thought if I wrote a cookbook, it would be the three color cookbook, and like every recipe has to have three colors. That was my
That's
main
great.
thing.
Great, great, great.
Because I love to have a put I just think your food should always be colorful.
Yep.
How about a favorite internet resource? Anywhere on the
Oh,
internet
boy.
that you like to go?
So I guess what I will say is that I'm thinking about the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance, which is an organization put together by Bill McDormand, the gentleman who went to Russia I was telling you about earlier. And
Okay, cool.
he's put together the Seed Alliance to de and he te he's basically developing a seed school in order to teach people how to save seeds and build a community or network of seed stewards around the country and around the globe. And so that popped into my mind when you asked me. I would say the internet is my best resource because I'm just looking all the time and I don't have one favorite
Lots of
thing.
people say Google or Bing.
Yep, Google.
How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine?
Yeah, okay, so, well, two of them come to mind, but one of the, I am also, as a result of going through these medicinals that I was telling you about, I've been getting very interested in learning more about using plants as dye material resource, you know, for dyeing fabric or cloth. And because a lot of medicinals, also a lot of plants, clearly, but including a lot of medicinals, have dye properties. And I just found my new in the moment favorite book called A Garden to Die For, DYE. I can't remember the author's name, but she's put together a visually spectacular book that's easy to read and easy to follow with great resource material in there on how to dye with anything in your garden. So, you know, your red cabbage plant is a great source of red dye. Carrots or the leaves of your carrots make a yellow dye, and your onion skin, and all sorts of things that you might not normally think about as a dye material has dye qualities. So I'm now putting together a list of seeds that you might want to buy together to plant with the intention of using to make your own dyes.
Okay, so you know I have to ask, did you dye any Easter eggs last weekend?
I did not.
That's okay, next year. Boy, there was a picture going around on Facebook.
Oh,
Now, it was
next year.
probably enhanced by Photoshop, but there were some beautiful, naturally dyed eggs going around on a photo on Facebook I saw last weekend.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, how about we're getting down to the end here. Since you have a business, do you have any advice for listeners about how to get started in a business? Or you could even talk about, getting started sharing seeds. Because I have to say that could be a little intimidating to people, I think. I know it would be for me on how to save the seeds at the end of the season.
Right. So, you know, I have the gift of being able to rely on the company founder, Harris, to still be providing us with seeds. So it's not all on me because I spent the time last year developing the business and doing that and growing and then trialing a lot of plants, but doing that and saving seeds. It was quite a lot. So, I would say a network of friends and community members is essential for anybody who's starting anything, whether it's a business or anything else. You know, use the
And
people.
now you have a Facebook page, right? That people would be able to connect with you.
Yes, we have a Facebook page.
And I'll put all this in the show notes. So there will be like links to that book that you mentioned, the different people that you've talked about, and your Facebook page and your website for sure. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. So it's called The Good Seed Company on Facebook. Help yourself. And that question also had a component about how to sell extra produce. And on that note, I will say that we're working together with a community of other local producers, be it of produce itself or of Montana-made ecologically produced goods, whether it's honey or fabric or wool or whatever. We're putting together a local food hub called Farm to Fork Food Hub with the idea of having an online store where members of the co-op can buy those products and pick them up once a week. And we're hoping to develop a network that will be a resource for people not only in the Whitefish area but for people from Eureka or Columbia Falls or Kalispell or Big Fork. And as that grows, it can become connected to other hubs throughout Montana that are centers for local growers in those areas, and then develop a network across the state for hooking up producers of Montana-made ecologically produced goods and consumers who are looking for those items.
Well, that's awesome. I do remember you telling me about that the first time we talked, and I think that's a great idea, and especially for people that want to start small or, you know, are always going to be small, just to be able to share that natural produce and different products that are made here, locally grown, or things that are nice for, you know, like ecologically friendly, like you said. Excellent.
Okay.
Good. So one of my last questions is, if there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? Like, is there a charity or an organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally or nationally or on a global scale?
I think the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the Earth is the quality of our soil. So without soil, we don't have food. Without food, we are unsustainable. And we, as a Western culture, whether it's this country or any other civilized or first world country, have become disconnected from the soil, and we are not taking care of it. So, and it's at risk. It really is at risk of destruction. So, if there were one thing I would like to see change, is to see people reconnect to the soil, understand that it is that the quality of our soil is the starting point for the quality of our food, and that is the key ingredient for the quality of our health. And what happens in our body is what happens on the planet. It's no different. It's the same. So,
you know, that is a great way to kind of reference that, or not necessarily reference, but like visualize it for people when they, you know, when I think about the obesity epidemic, because that's so obvious for people to see. And then when you think about our planet in that same, you know, that's just a really great way that you put that together.
Yeah. Thank you. So, you know, to tie it all together, I would say if everybody made a commitment to grow one plant, And eat from the plant that they grew, I think that would be a start. I, of course, would like them to save the seed from that plant, but that's too much. But literally, if anybody would just take the time, you know, plant a, I don't know.
Because you could even just put a tomato on your porch or a pepper or something little, just something small. And a lot of people that have been on the show, guests, and I have recommended to people, you know, start small. Don't overwhelm yourself. You know, just go little your first year. Just grow something that you really like to eat is the other thing. Don't grow things that you don't like to eat in the beginning.
Exactly.
Because it is.
Yeah. Honestly, here's my real vision, and I just feel like it's too much for some people to make, but I will take you up on this. If everybody planted one tomato plant on their patio, ate from that, took care of it, let it produce fruit, ate from that tomato plant, saved the seeds from one of those plants, and then planted that seed following spring and watch it make fruit again, I think that literally would turn the world around. Because when you realize that, because a lot of people grow their own food, okay, great, but they're always buying the seeds. This sounds like crazy for a seed company to be saying, but my point is that the extraordinary power that exists when you save your own seed and that teeny weeny little thing, one seed from one tomato plant that you ate, that you didn't eat, one seed that you then plant the next spring and it makes a plant with, 50 tomatoes on it. It's an extraordinary sense of power. It's an extraordinary sense of capability. It's an extraordinary sense of independence and freedom. It's just an amazing feeling. And, that I would love for everyone to have the experience of. But I'd be willing to just have them take a radish seed, throw the radish in a Dixie cup and eat the radish greens as a start.
Oh, that was just wonderful. I'm so glad you went on and said the whole thing, especially, Earth Day's coming up a week from Wednesday, and I just think just having you say that, maybe some brand new gardeners are only going to do one tomato, but there's probably some middle gardeners that have never saved seeds, and they're going to do that. I think a lot of people are going to listen to this and they're going to do that have never done that before, and they're going to feel that. Because I think that you really explained it, why it's important and the power of it. And I like that part too, because when I first graduated from school, my very first teaching job back in 2003, I think, before I did anything else, coincidentally, was teaching the Upward Bound class at
Oh, yeah.
FVCC. And I had been hired to teach the technology piece. And our goal was to put the yearbook together for the summer for the kids who Upward Bound is a program where high school kids go and they take a college class or two for the summer. They're kids who have only had like one parent or no parents graduated from college. So that it's kind of a put them in a group and kind of encourage them to go to college and graduate and succeed. And we had to put the yearbook together, and the theme that year was empowerment, self-empowerment. And so what did I do? I took them to Terrapin Farm, to Judy's farm over on the Farm to Market Road, and said, this is where we're going to learn how to take digital pictures. And so their goal to learn how to use the camera was to take pictures of the farm and learn how to grow food. And that was my vision of empowerment. So I just think that ties in so well. And I'm just glad you said that.
Oh, that's great.
So I think that's a great dream. And I'm so glad I've added this question. Okay, last one. Just do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden?
Oh gosh. Let me think. What keeps coming up when you ask is I watched this movie called Dirt. It's a great film, and there's a piece in there of these women who were in a prison and they started a garden, and it just the process of growing their own food literally shifted them and their lives as a result. And they had this great little song that they would sing, and what part of it was had a refrain in it that says, "Dirt don't hurt." And these are women who've had very difficult lives and have not felt like there's nothing that they can trust. But to a person, they learned how to trust again by taking the time to grow plants, because it's a very trusting, it the earth gives so much back. All you have to do is put a little bit of effort in, and it returns a thousandfold, the generosity and love that you give it. And it's continuous. And so that's what popped into my mind.
That's a great story. I had a guest on, Eve Clowers, who talked about her very first gardening experience. And she goes, Jackie, I'm not sure if you want me to say this. And then after she told me I had to, because her very first gardening experience was she was in Africa And somehow she got put in jail in Africa, some crazy story. But the side of it is that was her, where she, they were segregated back then. It was back in the 70s. And so she said that the colored people got to plant their own gardens and she didn't. And she was like, well, hey, I want to plant a garden. Can I have some seeds? So they gave her some seeds. And she grew a little garden and she took her food with her when she was done with her little 6 months. And they just thought that was the neatest thing. And it's a funny story.
That's great. That's a
And I
wonderful
know.
story.
It's like only you could come up with that story, Eve. My first garden in prison in Africa. So she's had an extraordinary life. She went on to do some work for the United Nations Environmental Program and just did some, lives an amazing life, is totally so self-sustainable here in Montana, lives up on this rocky mountain, snowed in most of the winter, still grows an incredible garden and her own food and makes the most delicious cheese you've ever tasted.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I'm an Italian, and let me tell you, her mozzarella cheese just beats anything I ever had in New York.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. So, well, cool. I'll have to look up that movie, Dirt. I like that. My husband's backhoe business is called Dirt Diggers.
Oh,
That's funny.
perfect.
So, I don't know, made me think of that too. Anyway,
Great, great.
well, thank you so much, Robin, for being my guest this afternoon and just sharing an incredible knowledge base, tons of tips and valuable nuggets for listeners and inspiration. I know people are going to love this episode. It's going to go out Monday morning, I'm pretty sure. So that'll be April 13th. And, if they want to connect with you, I'll put the links to the Facebook page there and your website, thegoodseedcompany.com, I think it was, right? It's dot com.
No, it's
It's dot net.
goodseedco.net, but I'll send it to
Goodseedcode.net. Yep. And just, do you want to say goodbye to the listeners?
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. It was a delight talking with you, Jackie. I love your enthusiasm and I love hearing all your stories. I think what you're doing is fabulous. And I invite you at another time to do another interview with my cohort here by the name of Margaret Roche, who does a lot of the growing for the Good Seed Company, and she'll give you a different perspective. She's a member of the next generation. She's in her late 20s, and she's committed to helping her generation bring back the variety of seeds that our ancestors used to enjoy and help rebuild our soils. So I think you'll get a different perspective from her, and you'd enjoy talking to her when it works.
Well, I would love that. And does she have a blog? I think I subscribe to her blog
I don't
and
know.
read her. I think, like, there's very few that I do, and I think she's one of my favorites. If I can't imagine. Well, I'll have to look. Well, thank you, Robin, so much for being our guest today.
Very good. You're
And
welcome. And we'll just be in touch, Jackie. Thank you for making the service available. I think it's a great service to offer Montanans,
thank you.
for both people who are new to gardening and who are longtime gardeners. It's a great resource and it's a lot of fun to listen to.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening. Have a great day.